Okay, good morning, everyone. Hope you're doing well. And we are in the home stretch before the great holiday of Shavuos. We've been speaking the past few weeks about the counting of the Omer. And the truth is, I haven't finished that material, but the Omer is finishing. So I want to talk today about the holiday of Shavuos. And again, as the nature of this shiur is primarily not inspirational, although occasionally I deviate, it's primarily analytical halacha. So I want to discuss what is really one of the most interesting questions about the holiday of Shavuos. Obviously, on Shavuos, we declare it is Zaman Matan Torasenu. It is the season of the giving of the Torah. So first of all, let me point out that in the Torah itself, there is no indication that that happened on Shavuos. The rabbis have to figure it out through various calculations. But in the Torah itself, Shavuos is described only as an agricultural festival, the time of Bikurim, and the like. So that's an interesting point, that the most significant part of Shavuos is that it is concealed. Now, some want to say that that emphasizes the primacy of the oral law, that the whole holiday of Shavuos is only known through the oral law, highlighting the idea that Matan Torah is not just the written Torah, but it's the oral Torah. So that's one point to keep in mind. But the other point to keep in mind is this. The very meaning of the phrase, and this is really Pashut Pshat, the day the Torah was given. What do we mean the Torah was given? It's very, very clear from the Chumash itself that the Jewish people received the 613 mitzvos over a prolonged period of time. In other words, the Moshe may have gotten it at Sinai, but Jewish people got mitzvot in dribs and drabs over a 40-year period. In fact, there were some mitzvot we did not have until the very day that Moshe Rabbeinu died. So the concept that the Torah was given to Am Yisrael on the holiday of Shavuos certainly does not mean the five books of Moses. First of all, a lot of events happened. I mean, Meraglim happened after Matan Torah, so we didn't get them ahead of time. And even the mitzvos themselves we got over time, right? You'll often see in the Torah that after a certain incident, V'yidaber Hashem el Moshe Leimon. So when we mean the Torah, we actually mean the Ten Commandments. We mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through kolos, ubrakim, thunder and lightning, a revelation of the Shekhinah, communicated the basic fundamentals of Judaism, which are the Ten Commandments. And even those, by the way, according to Rashi at least, we did not hear all of them from God. We only heard the first two, and then we were afraid, and Moshe was the intermediary for the other ones. And so Matan Torah does not mean the whole Torah. Matan Torah means the Ten Commandments, which were the foundation of all of the Torah. And indeed, Ramban wrote an interesting little kuntras to show how all of the 613 commandments are derivatives from the Ten Commandments. So, yeah. Ten Commandments do have all of the 613, but only beremes, only in allusion, not explicitly. And it could be we didn't even understand those allusions, meaning we got them when we got them, but they're all in there implicitly. So that's a second point, meaning point number one is that the very idea that Shavuot is Zman Matan Torah is concealed in the written Torah, and you only know it from the oral Torah. Point number two is Matan Torah does not mean the whole Torah, but it refers to the Aseres Hadibros. But now, point number three, which confuses a lot of people. If you look in Maseches Shabbos, you actually have a machlokes. What day did we receive the Ten Commandments? One opinion says it was on the 6th of Sivan, and one opinion says it was on the 7th of Sivan. In other words, the day after. Now we, of course, celebrate Shavuos on the 6th of Sivan. Now, some people make a mistake. It's an obvious mistake, but it's a mistake people make. And they think, oh, if there's a machlokes with the Ten Commandments on the 6th or the 7th, then there would be a machlokes if you observe Shavuos on the 6th or the 7th. That's obviously incorrect. The holiday of Shavuos is when it is, even if the Torah was given a day later. So how could that be? I mean, if I say the Ten Commandments are given on the 7th, then why do I celebrate Matan Torah on the 6th? So that alone is not a question for the following reason. If you look at the way the Torah dates Shavuot, The Torah does not assign a calendar date for Shavuos at all. The Torah does not say celebrate a holiday on the 6th or celebrate the holiday on the 7th. The Torah says you shall count from the second day of Pesach 49 days. This is the counting of the Omer. And on day 50, that is your celebration of the holiday of weeks. Shavuos means weeks. Now let's think about this. The original Jewish calendar was not a predetermined calendar, meaning every month witnesses would come and testify when they saw the new moon, and the Sanhedrin would make Rosh Chodesh. Our calendar, which only dates from around the 4th or the 5th century, after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, does create a regular structure of alternating months, 30 days, 29, 30 days, 29, 30 days, 29. And based on our calendar, the month of Nisan always has 30 days, and the month of Iyar always has 29 days. So if you have a 30 and a 29, the 50th day of the Omer is always going to be the 6th of Sivan. But that's a happenstance, meaning to say the following. The Torah says Shavuos is the 50th day of the Omer. In a calendar where Nisan is 30 and Iyar is 29, the 50th day will happen to come out on the 6th of Sivan. But when your calendar was variable, meaning any given month could have 29 days or 30 days. So here's what the Gemara says. If Nisan and Iyar both had 30 days, the 50th day of the Omer would be the 5th of Sivan, because you've used up two extra days there. And if Nisan and Iyar were both 29 days, Shavuos would be the 7th of Sivan. In other words, Shavuos is a floating holiday. Since Shavuos is defined as the 50th day in the Omer counting, depending on the calendar, if both Nisan and Iyar are 29, Shavuos will be the 7th. If both Nisan and Iyar are 30, Shavuos will be the 5th. If Nisan is 30 and Iyar is 29, which is actually our calendar, or the opposite would be true, which has never happened, Nisan is 29 and Iyar is 30, either way, only then is Shavuos the 6th. So consequently, whether or not the Torah was given on the 6th or the 7th of Sivan was simply a question if the calendar that year were Nisan and Iyar were 29, or Nisan was 30 and Iyar was 29. In other words, both opinions say we got the Torah on the 50th day of the Omer, and the Machlokas simply was what calendar day that was, and that's not relevant for the holiday of Shavuos. Okay, so this is a bit of a subtle thing. And in other words, it's very important to know that Shavuos is the date of, or the time of Shavuos is not defined by a calendar date at all. It is defined by the conclusion of the counting of the Omer. Why that is so, that goes back to a theme that the Sefer HaChinuch talks about, and we talked about a number of times, that Shavuos is actually the 51st day of Pesach, meaning to say it's one long holiday, because Pesach is the holiday of freedom, and Shavuos is the holiday of Torah. And by linking them together with a long period of time that the Ramban actually calls a long Chol HaMoed, the Torah is teaching us that freedom has meaning only when it is linked to submission to Hashem. And that is why we don't talk about Shavuos as the 6th of Sivan. We talk about Shavuos as X number of days from the counting of the Omer that began on Pesach. So all of that is good. In other words, the point I'm making is simply this. The machlokes, what calendar date we got the Torah, the 6th of Sivan and the 7th of Sivan, that in itself does not affect Shavuos, because Shavuos is the 50th of the Omer, and 6 or 7 is simply a question of whether it was Malei Chaser, 30 days, 29 days, and the like. But there is another question that is much more perplexing. We've been assuming that since the Torah says the holiday of Shavuos should be the 50th day of your count, that whether it was 6th of Sivan or 7th of Sivan, the Torah must have been given on the 50th day of the count. I mean, that would be the logic of it. And yet the Magen Avraham says we can prove that the Torah was given on the 51st day of the calendar, whatever calendar date that was. And here is his proof. The Gemara in Shabbos quotes a brisa from Seder HaOlam. What is Seder? You know, it's an interesting work people should be familiar with. Seder HaOlam is the rabbinic chronology of all of the events that happened in Tanakh. And it was written by the Tanoim. It says Rav Yossi is one of the greatest Tanoim, the Rebbe of Rav Yehuda Hanasi. So this is even earlier than the Mishnah, was said to be the author of Seder HaOlam. Like a lot of the chronologies that Rashi brings in Chumash that might be familiar to you, you know, how old was Yitzchak when he married, etc. How old was Rivka when she got married? All of that is based primarily on Seder HaOlam and the like. And it's considered to be, you know, the Vilna Gaon wrote commentaries on it, it's considered to be an authoritative work of rabbinic chronology. And Seder HaOlam brings a tradition that the day we left Mitzrayim was a Thursday. We left Mitzrayim on a Thursday. That means the 15th of Nisan, which is the day we left Mitzrayim, the first day of Pesach, was a Thursday. That would mean that the Omer count would begin Thursday night, Friday. Let's just use the day to be convenient. So Friday is day one of Sfira. If Friday is day one of Sfira, the completion of 7 weeks is Thursday. That's day 49. And that would make Friday day 50. And yet we have another Messiah that the Aseres Adibros were given on Shabbos. So if you go with Seder HaOlam, that we left Mitzrayim on Thursday, then the Torah was given on day 51, which there isn't, day 51 of the Sefirah. So how could we celebrate Matan Torah on day 50? See, the 6th and 7th Sivan, that's not really a problem because Shavuos Bichlal is not connected to a calendar day. But once you show that Matan Torah was on day 51 of the Sefirah, then it doesn't make sense. Now this is maybe a rare example of Chutz La'aretz getting it right. It turns out that the second day of Shavuos is the actual day of Matan Torah. Of course, we don't keep a second day of Shavuos, but in Chutz La'aretz, right? It's a fascinating point that, don't tell your kids, it would confuse them. The Ten Commandments were not given on Shavuos. The Ten Commandments were given the day after Shavuos, the second day. So how could we celebrate on Shavuos, the 50th day, Zaman Matan Torah? So this is a famous question of one of the greatest of the poskim, the Magen Avraham. It's on the Shulchan. Magen Avraham normally doesn't necessarily ask these types of questions. Magen Avraham is a posek, but here he talks about it.
He concludes the Kan Remish in the Shnei Yom Tov Shavuos. He concludes that here is a proof.
That's correct. That's not his terrorist discussion, but he does bring. Let me say the first thing that he says, and then I'll add the thing that you're adding. So the Magen Avraham says the following. Gemara in Shabbos actually says that Moshe Rabbeinu did certain things on his own volition that Hashem did not tell him to do. But after Moshe made a decision, Hashem agreed to what Moshe did. This is called Moshe Asa Midata, Yehizkim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oliyah. And the Gemara in Shabbos says there were three things that Moshe did on his own. The first thing that Moshe did was he separated from the time that Hashem appeared to him in Har Sinai, he became celibate, and he separated from his wife. Now this was a very, very, very controversial decision on his part. First of all, I mean, as a matter of hashkafa, Judaism as a whole does not endorse celibacy. And you'll recall that Aaron and Miriam were critical. That was the Lashon Hara. They were critical of Moshe's decision. So Moshe was a different type of situation than anyone else. And Hashem was maskim that Moshe did the right thing for him, only for him, not for anybody else. The second thing he did was he delayed Matan Torah by a day. Because Hashem told the people, sanctify yourself today and tomorrow, and I will come on the third day and give you the Torah. Moshe communicated, sanctify yourselves for 3 days, and then Hashem will give you the Torah. Right? So Moshe literally said, they need more time. He added a day to the preparations of Matan Torah. And the third thing he did was he broke the luchos. When he saw the, I mean, this is later, on the 17th of Tammuz, when he comes down from Har Sinai, and he sees the Jewish people, or some of them, worshiping the Egel Azov, he smashes the luchos, and Hashem didn't tell him to do it, but Hashem said that was the right decision. So, going back to the second event, that Moshe Rabbeinu added a day, so this is what the Magen Avraham says. Hashem's original plan was Wednesday, Thursday should be days of preparation, and he was going to give the Torah on Friday, which would have been day 50. Moshe turned day 50 into the day of preparation, pushing the Torah off, Matan Torah off to day 51, which was Shabbos. So we celebrate Shavuos, says the Magen Avraham, not on the day that Hashem gave us the Aseres HaDibros, but on the day that Hashem would have given us the Aseres HaDibros had Moshe Rabbeinu not been Mosef Yom Echad Midato. So it's still the case, according to the Magen Avraham, that nothing happened on day 50 of the Omer. Nothing happened, but it would have been the designated day, and that's why we celebrate it. Now, with respect to what you said, why did Moshe add an extra day? In other words, why did he make Matan Torah the second day, the 51st day? So that, Rav Menachem Azariah Mipano, the Magen Avraham quotes him. This may be an end that may not be familiar to everybody. This is called the Ramah, Reish Mem Ayin. Rav Menachem Azariah from Pano. Pano is a city in Italy. Was actually a very, very interesting person. A great posek and a very great makobo. That he was one of the main people who brought the Kabbalah of the Arizal to Europe. He was Italian. It's a shtickle controversy because the minhag of the Italian Mekubalim was not to have a beard. And it wasn't because they were modern. They actually had a shita that a beard has a certain madrega of kedusha, and it's only appropriate in Eretz Yisrael, and it's not appropriate to have beards in Chutz La'aretz. So we have some paintings of Rabbi Nachum Azariah without a beard that looks reform or whatever it is. And some of these paintings were airbrushed or corrected. They actually paint the beard on the face. But we know of Nachum Azariah and the Ramchal as well did not have a beard. This was the minhag in Italy. But Rav Nachum Azariah Mipano, who wrote many, many interesting and quite difficult svarim, actually writes that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to make the day after Shavuos, the especially holy Matan Torah, because that would give legitimacy to the idea of a second day of Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz. So it's not relevant for Eretz Yisrael, but it was to make a chizuk for the Yom Tov Sheni. But the actual answer of why we celebrate Shavuos, not because of that, we celebrate Shavuos on the first day, because that is the day that Hashem would have given the Torah. By the way, Rav Huttner, again, I'm just digressing a little bit because Rav Nachum Azariah may not be familiar to you. Rav Huttner writes a very historical point, why Rav Nachum Azariah is especially important in the history of Kabbalah. You know, the Arizal only taught Kabbalah for 2 years. He came to Eretz Yisrael at 37, and he died at 39. The Ari's whole teaching career was literally only 2 years. He died in a plague, but he did have a number of Talmidim in Tzfat. But eventually, Rav Chaim Vital was kind of coronated as the only authorized expositor of the Ari's teachings. And when we talk about the Ari's writings, we really don't mean the Ari's writings. We really mean Rav Chaim Vital writes and interprets what the Ari means. Now, there were other Talmidim who did have other traditions sometimes. There were Talmidim before the Ari met Rav Chaim Vital, etc. And Rav Chaim Vital was a little, I mean, I say this in a good way, he was a little autocratic. He actually demanded that all the Talmidim of the Ari turn over their notebooks to him, and he will winnow through them and determine what is authoritative, what is not authoritative, what was misunderstood by the etc. And as a result, our whole Havana of the Kabbalah of the Ari is only through Rav Chaim Vital, who himself was a great Makubo. Then Rav Chaim Vital wrote his own Svara as well. So Rav Futner points out, in a kind of a complicated argument, that Rabbi Nachum Azariah was Makabel, the Kabbalah of the Ari, from Talmidim other than Rav Chaim Vital. And he preserved some of those traditions in his Svarim, particularly the Sefer Asara Ma'amaros, which is a very, very classic book in Kabbalah. So Rav Futner said that this is extremely important because it is literally the only source that preserves other understandings of the Arizal besides that of Rav Chaim Vital. And he points out there are some differences. There are some chidushim in Rav Menachem Azariah's Svarim that you will not find in the Kitzvei Arizal of Rav Chaim Vital. So he says Rama Mipano was a very, very important figure. And indeed, if you look at Tanya and you look at the Chassidus later, you'll see that they borrowed quite a lot from Rav Menachem Azariah, adding and supplementing to the Kitzvei Ari. Unlike, for example, Sephardic Kabbalists, who are meticulous, they only do Rav Chaim Vital, they will not look at anything else. But in Chassidus, they borrowed a lot from Rav Menachem Azariah. Rav Menachem Azariah was also very, very wealthy. He was a personal friend of Rav Yosef Kaira. And I believe he paid for the printing of the Shulchan Aruch. He was like involved in a lot of stuff. Kabbalah and Halacha and Shelos and Shuvos and everything else. Okay, I'm sorry, someone had you want to say something?
Yeah, I've always been confused with the idea of 2 days of Yontif and Chutz La'aretz, the reason for it. I mean, my understanding of it was that it had to do with when Rosh Chodesh was, I guess, but if we have a fixed calendar,
yes.
Why do we still...
Yes, work? Yes, so that's a very good question. There is no... you are correct. The origin of 2 days of Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz was because of calendrical uncertainty at a time when Rosh Chodesh was a variable date and the people in Chutz La'aretz weren't able to get the news. That would logically mean, you're correct, that now that we have a fixed calendar, there is no reason for 2 days of Yom Tov. And the Gemara itself asks your question. The Gemara says, why do we keep 2 days of Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz if we have a fixed calendar? And the answer is that once it became a custom in Klal Yisrael, so Chazal did not want to interrupt the custom. Mystically, Kabbalistically, the argument is, although that's not the original reason, that Chutz La'aretz, because it's not as holy as Eretz Yisrael, needs the purification of 2 days of Yom Tov. We're not going to take it away. You need 2 days of Yom Tov. But there's another question that you need to understand. And that is, and this really ties into the Rav Nachum Azariah, that even with that logic, there is no reason why Shavuos should be 2 days. You see why? Because eventually, even Chutz La'aretz figured out what Rosh Chodesh was. Now, since Shavuos is 50 days from the counting of the Omer, by the time Shavuos comes, we knew when Nisan was, and if we knew when Nisan was, we'll know when Shavuos is. Yeah? So in reality, the Rambam writes that the only reason why there's 2 days for Shavuos is the Chachamim didn't want to discriminate or distinguish.
Look.
And that's why Rav Nachum Azariah says Moshe needed to make a special chizuk by making Matan Torah the second day, because that would give it more of a logic why you have a second day. Meaning, all the other second days are because of Suffolk and we carry it over. Shavuos was not a Suffolk. Even at the time of the temple, there wouldn't have been a Suffolk. But it's only a special takana, shelo tachlok b'moados. And that's why Moshe was made it the day of Matan Torah, to give that day chizuk. So that is a very, very good question. By the way, that also has implications regarding tourists. You know, one of the big shilas that everybody has is, if you're an American tourist and you're in Israel for the holidays, do you keep 2 days or 1 day? So as you know, many Sfardim and Chabad, they say, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. When in Jerusalem, do as the Jerusalems do. So they basically say, you keep 1 day, right? It's very simple. You're in America, you keep 2 days. You're in Israel, you keep 1 day. That is Chabad, and that is Sfardim. And that is the view of the Chacham Tzvi. In terms of logic, it's a very, very logical position. But the Ashkenazic consensus is not that way. And the Ashkenazic consensus is that if you are here temporarily and you are planning on going back, you must keep 2 days in Eretz Yisrael, and it's only when you intend to stay here that you now become an Israeli and you keep one day. And then, of course, because of that, we have a voluminous literature. When are you considered to be permanent? What if you're coming here for 5 years? That, in other words, once you go with the idea that if you're here to stay, you keep one day. If you're planning on going back, you keep 2 days. Then, of course, you're opening a Pandora's box of gazillions, which I get 10 of these a day, gazillions of questions of, when are you permanent, when are you not? Like Sfardim and Chabad, life is very, very simple. You're here, you keep one day. You're there, you keep 2 days, right? But the Ashkenazic Pesach is a bit more complicated.
Rav Kook also?
There were many. It used to be, but when I say Ashkenazic Pesach, I mean in recent decades. Mm-hmm. In fact, there were earlier poskim of Shmuel Salant who actually said one day was good enough. Even Rav Soloveitchik said he didn't want to change the custom, but he said Meikar Hadin, one day would be enough.
Which synagogues here keep 2 days?
Well, there's no synagogue that keeps 2 days, but there are what are called chutz la'aretz minyanim, meaning you have to look around. It's not always so easy to find, but in most of the hotels that have services, there will be a second day service. Some shuls will announce, no shul officially keeps 2 days here, but they will announce a minyan for people of chutz la'aretz. I know Pesach especially is very, very difficult, because to find a second Seder, unless you're making your own, but to find a second Seder can be very, very, very hard. I know people that literally couldn't find a place to go. But Shavuos is just a question of davening, so that generally speaking, you'll be able to find a second day.
Hotels happen.
Say again?
Some of the hotels have...
Yeah, I'm saying hotels that have tourists will have second day minyan.
So it's enclaves like Shara Chesed and Rechavia, where there are a lot of tourists there.
Shara Chesed in particular, I am aware of a second day minyan.
But Shlomo Zalman was very against it.
That's correct. The Gedolei Eretz Yisrael were very much against any type of public. Privately, you may have to keep 2 days. They weren't questioning that. You don't do anything public. Just like, for example, in Chutz La'aretz, for sure it's that way. It is absolutely wrong. If you're an Israeli in Chutz La'aretz, you are not allowed to make a weekday minyan on Yom Tov. That's absolutely the case. So some create a symmetry. If an Israeli in Chutz La'aretz is not allowed to make a weekday minyan, then a Chutz La'aretz in Eretz Yisrael is not allowed to make a Yom Tov minyan. But some make a difference. Some say that for me to make a weekday minyan in Chutz La'aretz, I'm insulting the holiness of the Chag. On the other hand, if I'm just insulting the profane of the weekday, that's not so bad. Meaning, there's not such a bizayon in taking the second day and making it a Chag. So some do say, and in fact that's the minimum, that we do have Chutz La'aretz minyanim, but you are correct. Rabbi Yashuv of Shlomo Zalman felt that people who were keeping Yom Tov Sheni should daven privately. They should not make me
that's
so
well
you don't lose your birthday. Your birthday is still 7th
February 29th.
It's hard to know. I think you were born on a holy day, so whatever your neshama got when you were born would be based on the day of your birth, so it's not you lose anything in that way. So Mitzvah Hashem, you'll continue to benefit from that holiness. And as the Magen Avraham says, the one thing you got going for you is it is the day of Matan Torah, right? No matter what, here and there, it's the same day. The Torah was given the day after the 51st day, so that much you'll always have to your credit. Yes, sir.
Sorry, what you said before, the Rambam says that Shavuos is a loy plug.
Yeah.
So based on that, some surface sense for the Bnei Chutz La'aretz, Yom Tov Sheni of Shavuos is more strict than all the other Yom Tov Sheni. We said they got to be writing a get and a few other things. That because of the loy plug is stronger than a minik.
Right, that is correct. The Chassam Sofer has a very famous psak. The Shiloh was, again, as you said, the Shiloh was that there was a Shechiv Meirah, person on his deathbed, And if he would die, his wife would need, he had no children, so his wife would need chalitza in order to be able to marry. And because the brother was very far away, and in those days it wasn't easy to travel, she wouldn't be able to get the, it would be difficult for her to get the chalitza, which could have left her stranded as an aguna. A woman who needs chalitza doesn't get it, it's like a married woman without a get. So somebody suggested that on the second day of Shavuos, you know, this is towards his death, maybe we can write a get, because even though you're not allowed to do malacha on Yom Tov Sheni, since it's only rabbinic, maybe to prevent a woman from being an aguna, we could transgress rabbinic prohibitions of malacha. So the Chassam Sofer disagreed on two points. First of all, he said, it's even on a regular second day of Yom Tov, you're not going to matur an Isra Drabanan because of this. And then he made the extra point that even if you would permit it on the second day of Pesach or Sukkos, you could not permit it on the second day of Shavuos, where the Yom Tov Sheni is more chamor than other Yom Tov Sheni. So that was a tshuva of the Chassam Sofer. Okay. Now, the thing I want to go over is this. So it turns out we celebrate the holiday of Shavuos not on the day the Torah was given, but on the day the Torah would have been given had Hashem's original plan taken place. So the question is, why should the hypothetical be more significant than the actual? Let's celebrate the actual day, not the day that would have been. So there's a Gemara, and we've mentioned this Gemara a few times, about a big machlok, one of the famous Agadatas in Shas, Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, about the status of an earthenware oven. Is it Tameh? Is it Tohar? And Rabbi Eliezer refused to agree to the majority of the sages. The majority of the sages said that it is Tameh, it receives impurity. Rabbi Eliezer said because of its construction, it does not receive impurity. And he was overruled. So after he was overruled, he called upon Hashem to do miracles to show that he's in the right. And he said, if the halacha is like me, let the carob tree uproot itself. And the carob tree uprooted itself. And the Chachamim said, we don't listen to trees. If the halacha is like me, let the water change its course. And the water changed its course. And the Chachamim said, we don't listen to rivers. If the halacha is like me, let the walls of the Beis HaMedrash collapse inward. And the walls were collapsing inward. And Rabbi Yoshua said to the walls, don't you dare move anymore. The walls didn't know what to do. Should they straighten up like Rabbi Yoshua is ordering them to do, or should they keep on going like Rabbi Eliezer? And because of that, the walls remained in a slanting position. They were explaining the reason why our Beis HaMedrash, the walls are crooked, are slanted, is because of this. And once again, as you can guess, we don't listen to walls. We don't care about trees. We don't care about water. We don't care about walls. So finally, Rabbi Eliezer takes out the big guns. And he says, if the halacha is like me, let there be a voice min ha-shamayim, a basko, and say the halacha is like me. And a voice from Shamayim said, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. And the Chachamim said, you know, we don't listen to heavenly voices either. Because you in your Torah, God, said, Lo Hashamayimi, the Torah is not in heaven. You gave us the authority to paskin the halacha based on a majority of the sages. Even you, God, are bound by the halachic structure that you created. Now this is pretty remarkable. This is a classic example of chutzpah, you would think. But the Gemara recounts that somebody met Eliyahu HaNavi later and asked Eliyahu HaNavi, what did Hashem respond to that chutzpah? And it says, Hashem was laughing. And Hashem said, my children have beat me. It's chuni banai. They're right. I'm going to stay out of it. Now, the question is this. There is a rule, lo b'shamayim, that this is in fact a halachic rule. A prophet cannot change the halacha by telling you. Now, this is not because, now this is a critical point. You might have said, oh, I don't listen to heavenly voices because how do I know they're real? Maybe they're hallucinations. That might have been the point. But that's not the implication of the Gemara. The Gemara does not say the heavenly voice was inauthentic. Rather, even if it's a genuine message from God, a genuine message, although how will we know this, but let's assume we know this, doesn't make a difference. God cannot change the halachic structure that he set up in the Torah. So the Ran asks a very simple question. What is the sense of that? Because when we try to figure out what the halacha is, what we're really trying to figure out is, what does Hashem want me to do in a given situation? Now, since most of us do not have access to directly asking Hashem, so we have to look at texts. We look at Mishnah, we look at Gemara, and we look at analogies, because we're trying to reconstruct what is the will of God. So if all learning is an attempt to reconstruct the will of God, but God tells you what his will is, how can you possibly say that's irrelevant? An example, let's imagine children are deciding what they want to give their father for a birthday present. So they're sitting in a room, and one says, oh, Abba really likes a safer, one says Abba likes a tie, or Abba likes whatever it is, a key ring, whatever you want to get, a computer. And Abba walks by, and Abba says, you know, what I really like is, you know, X. So the kids say, Abba, please stay out of this. We are deciding what it is that you want, and you really have no role to play in this discussion, with all respect. That doesn't make sense. I mean, if we're trying to figure out what Dad wants for his birthday, and Dad tells you, I would think at least that's a relevant piece of evidence. So Lo L'Shamayim actually makes no sense at all, because you're trying to figure out what is God's will, and God can't tell you what his will is? So the Ran offers a remarkable idea which can be misunderstood and misapplied. It'll sound almost like conservative reform theology, but it's not. And that is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah in such a way in which he wanted the human input of logic and reasoning, meaning he gave us a structural foundation. Structural foundation, 13 principles of interpretation, etc. And then he said, I want you to take my raw materials and utilize them to apply these klalim, these yesodos, to the everyday shilas of life. Torah is eternal, but life is ever-changing. And it was given to the chachamim of every generation, to apply the foundational principles of God to questions. So, for example, there are new questions all the time. There were new questions at the time of the Gemara, there are new questions today. So let's assume we have a Shaila, surrogate mother, electricity on Shabbos, whatever it is, cloning. So people might say, well, what did God tell Moshe about cloning? So my answer is, or the Ran's answer, I think, would be, God didn't tell Moshe anything about cloning. God gave Moshe the principles from which the Chachamim will be able to adjudicate the status of cloning. And that's why there can be arguments about this. People ask the question, if Hashem gave Moshe the oral law, then how could there be an argument where some people say kosher, some people say treif? What did God say? The answer is, God did not give Moshe specific rules on every conceivable question. God gave Moshe a process. God gave Moshe a methodology. The process and that methodology were entrusted to the sages. And as the Rambam writes, two people with the same methodology can come up with different conclusions. But both of them are treated as truth because God gives you full credit for the process. As long as you're, now these are some big questions I'm masking over, as long as you are an authorized interpreter of the Torah, so it's not something we can just do on our own, and as long as you're utilizing the methodology, God will bless your results as halachically true, even if they're not the answer that God himself would have come to. It's like a mathematics teacher. Let's assume you worked out a very complex problem. The teacher might say, I will give you credit for the process because you've shown that you've done the process right, even if it happened to be you didn't come up with the final answer. Which means there is mathematical truth and there is halachic truth. Mathematical truth is a matter of fact. 1 + 1 = 2. If I say 3, it's not my opinion, I'm just wrong. How does the saying go? Everybody's entitled to their opinion, but not everybody is entitled to their facts. You don't know your own set of facts. Although, remember Kellyanne Conway talked about that President Trump had alternative facts. But okay, Seder. So you have to understand what this means. This actually means that when the Chachamim decide a matter of halacha, it becomes the will of God. It becomes the will of God, even though that was not the answer that God himself would have come to. That's lo b'shamayim hi. It's an amazing thing. Now, you may say, that's a very bizarre way to give a law code. If God is giving us laws, why does he basically say, I'm leaving it to you to figure out, and even if you're wrong, you know, I'll give you credit for it. So an analogy would be, you want to say something?
Yeah. Is there going to be a correction in Yemei Mashiach?
Yeah, so it's interesting. That's an interesting question. There is a teaching from the Arizal that when Mashiach comes, the halacha is going to be like Beit Shammai over Beit Hillel. So that implies that halachic perceptions themselves may change. But let me give you an example that illustrates this idea that even if we get it wrong, God says, good enough for me. That's what I want. I want your mistakes. I want what you come up with in Torah. Let's assume that you want to make a cake for your four-year-old. Now, by far, the easiest thing you can do is that when your four-year-old is asleep or in bed, you make a cake. Or even better, you buy a cake. Go to a bakery, buy a cake. Beautiful cake. But a much deeper level of love is when you involve the child in creating the product. Now, the cake that you're going to bake with a four-year-old, it's probably not going to be as good of a cake as you could have done yourself. You know, it'll be messy. There'll be sugar on the floor and cocoa on the counter and eggshells in the batter, and this will be overbaked and underbaked. You could have done a much better job without her. So if the goal is to simply have a perfect cake, why have the kid involved at all? But if the goal is to deepen a relationship, then you want to have as much investment with your child as you can, because that deepens the relationship. God did not want Torah to simply be a one-way street where he simply gives us things on a silver platter. God says, I want you to be my partners in this cake. By taking the raw materials that I give you and applying them to life. And yes, in an objective way, the cake that you make will be less perfect than the cake I would make. Uncertainty, machlokas, confusion, debate. But ultimately, that's what I want. I want the human input into the creation of halachic truth. Now, that's why it's called Matan Torah. Matan is the giving. See what's going on? It's not simply God commanding us. God gave us something. That human input, that human dimension. So, if we ask, if Matan Torah is understood as God deferring to man in the promulgation of halachic truth, when was the first time that that deference was manifested? It was on a Friday. The Friday was the 50th day of the Omer. That should have been the day that the Torah was given. But God deferred to Moshe Rabbeinu's interpretation and pushed it off a day. That's Matan Torah. In other words, Matan Torah is not when God gave us the Ten Commandments. Matan Torah is when God changed his own plan in deference to Moshe Rabbeinu's interpretation. So Matan Torah was an act of, was an omission rather than an act of commission. So yeah, we celebrate Shavuos. What happened on Shavuos? Nothing. What happened on the 50th day of the Omer? Nothing happened on the 50th day of the Omer. Everything happened on the 51st day of the Omer. But the fact that nothing happened, even though it was Hashem's plan, that something should happen, is the greatest Matan Torah of all, the involvement of the human being in the promulgation of divine truth, right? So that's a fascinating idea of what Matan Torah represents. So it's still the case. The Ten Commandments were not given until the day after Shavuot, but we treat the day of Shavuot as the day of Matan Torah. Now again, as they say, these aren't potentially controversial ideas because, human beings take control of the Torah, they can do all sorts of things with it. And in the wrong hands, like anything else, this can be misused, this can be abused, this can be misapplied, and it has been misapplied. But you know, it's like nuclear energy. You know, nuclear energy is very, very beneficial. It can really help the world in many, many positive ways. In the wrong hands, it's very, very dangerous. So this notion of human input into the halakhic process is like nuclear energy. It can indeed, and it has been used, as a justification for reform and a justification for abolition of halakha, and one has to be very careful. But that doesn't obscure the fundamental truth that the halakhic system is a system that is designed to involve human creativity and dynamic input into halakhic principles. People make a very big mistake. I face this in our Samach and yeshivas all the time, where you know we always have this idea, every word of the oral law was given to Moshe at Sinai and passed down. Now, this results in people saying, and I have students who say this, that every word of the Gemara was given by Hashem to Moshe and handed down until Rav Ashi's time, when there was a danger of it all being forgotten, so it had to be written down. Now, I open up a page of Gemara, and I see a rabbi called Abaye talking to Rava. These are rabbis. We know when they lived. Were they reading from a script? Were they told, hey, Abaye, on such and such a day, in such and such a year, you're supposed to say these words? That's crazy. Obviously, when Abaye is talking, Abaye is saying his words. And Rava and Abaye are thinking and analyzing. There's no way that these are transcripts of things that were handed down from Moshe. So in what way, therefore, is it true, and it is true, that the oral law was given to Moshe? It's not referring to specific rulings, although there are a few of those, which are called halacha Moshe Misinai. It's referring to methodology and concept. And it's then left to the Tanaim, to the Amoraim, to the Gaonim, to the Rishonim, to the Achronim, to our very day, to take these concepts and work with them and weave them together and apply them. So just as it's been said that, you know, in the seed of the oak tree is the whole tree in potential, so too in what God said to Moshe is the seed and the potentiality of everything that will ever be developed, yes. But that doesn't mean the actual developments were given to Moshe. That is the role of the human being. That is Hashem saying, I give you the raw materials and you make the cake. So it's a little, I don't know if it's dangerous, but certainly it's obscene. I mean, I'll get a question from people that are 10 years out of yeshiva. I don't really understand how the Gemara could have been given to Moshe at Sinai if Abaye lived, you know, in the second century. I said, you're right. They gave you the wrong definition of Torah Shebal Peh. So Torah Shebal Peh is dynamic. We sometimes have this view that all it was lugging around a huge sack of information that you had to give to the next generation. Not true, meaning it gets added to in every generation. It does get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, but because of the information and analyses that is being added. So one has to understand the dynamic nature of the Torah Shebal Peh. Okay, anyone? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
I mean, just to go back to what you were saying about Matan Torah before, so you're saying that there, Hashem deferred to Moshe Rabbeinu and gave the Torah on the
next
first
day.
But on the other hand, we are now going back to what Hashem wanted and celebrate Shavuot on the 50th.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Is that correct?
That is correct. That's exactly
okay,
right.
So it's
because
it's a
Well, we kind of get, you know, God gives into us. We give
and
into
we
God.
Gave it, we, right.
But the irony is, we're giving into God by celebrating the day that God deferred to us.
Right, so it's like a little bit of a
right, right. So we're going
it's
in
beautiful,
the circle.
I love it.
Right, right, right.
It is,
so so that's the meaning of the holiday of Shavuos. Again, I wish everybody a Chag Sameach, a truly joyous holiday. Oh, Chodesh Tov, that's right, Chodesh Tov as well. And you know, the world is going through a very dangerous place, but we know that Matan Torah requires Ish Echad uVelev Echad, and may we achieve that Achdus and Avos Yisrael.
Thank you.